wenn eigentlich nichts mehr geht.
Der Steuerpodcast von Streckmark Schwedhelm.
Die heutige Episode steht ganz im Zeichen des kommenden IFA-Kongresses. Zwischen dem 5. und dem 9. Oktober diesen Jahres wird die IFA nach 60 Jahren wieder nach Portugal zurückkehren. Wir wollen dies zum Anlass nehmen, ein Stück weit uns den Vorbereitungen dieses Kongresses zu widmen, uns anzuschauen, was die Besucherinnen und Besucher des Kongresses erwarten wird, sowohl fachlicher als auch kultureller Natur. Und wollen ein Stück weit hinter die Kulissen blicken. Dazu haben wir uns heute einen ganz besonderen Gast eingeladen. Ich darf herzlich begrüßen Herrn João Nogueira. João Nogueira ist Professor an der Portugiesischen Katholischen Universität. Er ist stellvertretender wissenschaftlicher Leiter beim IBFD und er ist Vizepräsident der portugiesischen Landesgruppe der IFA, hat dadurch natürlich eine besondere Rolle beim Kongress. Und diese Rolle wird zusätzlich noch dadurch verstärkt, dass er auch als General Reporter fungiert. Ciao, herzlich willkommen.
Thank you so much and thank you for this kind invitation to the podcast. It is really a pleasure to be here and to be with your audience. And I apologize for speaking in English, not in German. Indeed, I studied German for almost 8 years, including in Germany. But over the last years, I have not practiced my German. So it's easier for you and for me and for the audience to listen to these to the answers in English.
Thank you for attending at our podcast. We are very happy to have you. So, as said, the IFA Congress is returning to Portugal. How excited are you and how the preparations going?
Amazing. For me, it's not really a return. It's really the first time because when the Congress was last organized in Lisbon, I was minus 17 years old. So it was 17 years before I was born. And so I have no, as you may understand, I have no recollection. And the sad part is likely it is not going to return to my country in my lifetime. So it's an excellent opportunity to present Portugal to the world, to show how nice the country is in terms of natural beauties, and also the specificities of the Portuguese tax system. We have some interesting features that make Portugal, for some, being a tax haven, especially for individuals. And also, this is something that I hope to discuss and to showcase our country. One of the unique things that we have, and it is the only country in the world that has domestic arbitration. So we solve tax cases through domestic arbitration. And so I hope that people going to the Congress get even more acquainted with Portugal for those that have been or get to know Portugal, and also get to know a little bit of our tax law specificities.
Great. So maybe if we go one step back, I guess that a lot of our listeners has not yet attended an IFA Congress. If to someone who has no idea what is expecting someone at the Congress, you would have to explain, so what is the IFA and what is the Global Congress? From my perspective, this is some kind of main event in the tax academic world for tax professionals. How would you describe it?
IFA stands for International Fiscal Association, and this comes from a very old tradition in law of having once per year a discussion. So before IFA, so before the inception of IFA, more than 80 years ago, we had ILA, International Law Association. So we were part, the tax law discussions were taken together with international public law. And at a certain point, it autonomized and there was the creation of IFA, or the antecessor of IFA, which is also the antecessor of IBFD, International Bureau of Fiscal Documentation, where I currently work. That was more than 8 years ago. So IFA represents this gathering of everyone that has an interest in tax. And it's not only tax lawyers. We have tax economists, people from management, and also from different angles. You will see practitioners, you will see judges, you will see tax authorities, Ministry of Finances, basically every single angle from which tax law or tax can be worked on, they will be represented there. And it is really the biggest gathering in the year. So we have, in terms of numbers, it is the Congress, the Tax Congress with the widest participation. And also the numbers are not public and are not final, but we anticipate. We received some numbers already, and I think it's going to be the biggest Congress ever. And also considering that next year it's going to be in Melbourne, and when it's outside of Europe, the numbers reduce a little bit. So this is really a unique opportunity to come to Lisbon and to meet all the big names in, and also not big names in tax. So summing up, it's a great Congress where you can find the people that are interested in taxation all over the world, and also where you can get updated with the latest developments. But not only that, there are some evergreen topics that are also discussed, and the topic of residence is one of them. So we have some seminars that are devoted to recent developments and other seminars that are devoted to evergreen topics, but really matter in the day-to-day life of whoever works in taxation, being it a judge, a practitioner, a scholar, a Ministry of Finance. You will find always something that is interesting for you.
So now, having a look on the academic topics, what is expecting us in this year's Congress?
So we have two excellent main topics. I'm really proud of the topics. The first, I've already lifted a little bit the veil. The first one is residence of legal entities, basically residence for corporate income taxation. And this is how we met, you and I. So I was appointed general reporter by the PSC, and you were appointed national reporter, I assume, from the German IFA branch. And we got to know each other in these roles. And I think it's going to be a friendship for life. We already met physically in the past IFA Congress, and I'm sure that we are going always to have interesting discussions every time we meet. But there is also another topic which is also very interesting, which is improper use of tax treaties from the source perspective. Sometimes we speak a lot of improper use of tax treaties from the residency side, and the residency is already taken care of by the first topic. So the idea was to counterbalance and to have something that is worth discussing from the source state perspective. How can you protect yourself from the improper use, especially almost 10 years after BEPS? So what were the changes? What are still the schemes, the planning that is used, and what are the forthcoming measures, and how will they impact this improper use? But then, after these two main topics, and the main topics are discussed in the mornings of Monday and Tuesday, you have also seminars. And the seminars, most of them are overlapping, so you have to choose between one and the other. But normally we try to distinguish between topics that will cater for a certain type of professionals and others for others. But the topics, and to be very brief, because I don't want to upset your audience with a long description, but the topics are very timely. The first of them is the implementation of Pillar 2. So we have already seen Pillar 2. How is it going to be implemented in practice, and what issues is it bringing in the different jurisdictions? But together with that, and this is likely the most interesting part for the audience, is the corporate income tax decluttering. Because that was really the expectation that with Pillar 2, a lot of measures, a lot of anti-abuse measures would be reduced. And there is already a stream of work at the OECD level. There is also reports that there is a stream of work at the EU level. So we will gather together will gather everyone and discuss what can be the corporate income tax systems. And I think that regardless whether you are a practitioner, a tax authority, or a judge, I think we all agree that some decluttering is needed. Not only corporations, but also I think tax authorities are expecting this. The second one, Seminar B, is on wealth taxation. So it's really something that is now at the top of the debate, also following the discussions at the G20 level. Some countries have already wealth taxation. I don't think that is the case in Germany. That is surely not the case in Portugal, at least as it's being discussed right now. But we want to learn from countries that have wealth taxation, what happen in those countries and those that had and removed it, and also from the others, what is in the works and what are the limitations, the constitutional law limitations. Because in many countries, we have reports that say, well, wealth taxation is not admissible because our constitution doesn't allow it. Topic C is on, this is an interesting one. This is more focused on practitioners, but is tax planning avoidance and evasion, liability of intermediaries. Why? And the focus is liability of intermediaries. Why? Because there is a growing trend in some jurisdictions, and this is expanding, to consider the tax practitioner as a sort of part of the tax planning scheme. So when they do in the investigations, they progressively involve the tax practitioner, and when they trigger the criminal side of the case, they now co-involve the tax practitioner as a co-author of the scheme. And in an area where there is so much uncertainty and where we live really with a lot of gray areas, is this admissible? Can we do it? Where is the dividing line between normal advisory and really health advisory that sometimes has a different understanding from tax authorities and criminal law, right? You are committing a crime or you are advising a crime. And I would say that 100% of the audience stays below the line. And eventually, where it crossed to the other side, at least it didn't represent that ever that could be considered the crime. So, but more and more, some honest colleagues report, look, I gave this advice. On my understanding, this was admissible. And now I have a criminal proceeding. And we have in Portugal some people for over 10 years with an indictment that doesn't go on and off, because these procedures take a lot of time. And imagine that you want to go on holidays and you need to ask authorization of a judge because you are leaving the jurisdiction. So I think this is a timely topic and it requires wider discussion. Then the other one, ESG and taxation. Why? Because it's one of the core topics. We want to understand what is the impact of ESG policies. And it's not only on transfer pricing. So we know the transfer pricing dimension of ESG. You have a cost, you have to split the cost throughout the different parts of the company. But it's also how decisions are changed and how tax decisions are changed because of the new ESG requirement. So I got another must go. Then we have the transfer pricing and intergroup services. Normally, there's always a transfer pricing seminar. And we thought, the Portuguese branch thought that really intergroup services is the thing that is bothering us the most. Within all the transfer pricing, we were undecided on intangibles, but really, intergroup services takes from a proportionally, it appears more. So we want to have a good discussion on what's going on and future perspectives. And finally, we have the signature seminars, the IFA OECD, where we always have people from the OECD explaining the latest trends and what's upcoming in the next 365 days, the IFA EU, where we discuss also the EU developments and what is forthcoming for the next year. And I think this is about the staple seminars. Then, very briefly, I should also mention that there are other, still in the topic, but new seminars, which is the WIN seminar and the Young IFA Network Association seminar. The WIN, that is on global mobility. The WIN, the Women of IFA Network, that is going to be on challenges in M&A. And we have some IFA launch seminars on tax directors and on Pillar 2 and its ramifications, and also a dialogue between IFA, OECD, and the ICC on the future of tax certainty. So, and I'm sorry for the time it took, but it's really a long program, and I wanted to highlight some aspects of the seminar. So there is really something of interest for everyone in this audience. Likely all of the topics, but if not all of the topics, at least 80% are quite interesting.
I think this was a great overview with many, many highlights expecting us. However, I also would like to mention that the academic program is just one part of the IFA Congress. Another dimension is, of course, the social part, the networking and all the cultural experiences that are also quite important. So what is expecting us at this year's Congress in this dimension?
I mean, for most of us, or at least for me, going to a IFA conference means also going for the first time to a certain country, because you would not go. I mean, I often go to Cape Town because I regularly teach there, but for most of us, it's not really a location that you would go for professional reasons, right? So you take advantage, you go to the Congress, you know a new city, and you also want to know a little bit more of the culture of the country. So that's our challenge, to show you a little bit more of the culture of our country. It starts on Saturday. We have the golf tournament. I don't play golf. I played mini golf. It doesn't qualify, but I don't play golf. But there's a lot of people participating in the tournament. Unfortunately, at this point, the recording is already sold out, so it's not possible to join the golf tournament. But yes, Portugal is one of the places with the best golf courts in Europe, and we fortunately have water to water them throughout the year, so we have good weather and nice water to water all these fields. Then we have on Sunday, for those that arrive a little bit earlier, we have guided tours in the morning. Some of them are within Lisbon itself, and some of them go to the exterior of Lisbon. One of them goes to Sintra. Sintra is one of these fantastic places where you have the castles where the kings would like to go. It's a little bit, it's not as good as Neuschwanstein, but it's a sort of place where you have this castle in the middle of nowhere up in the air, and it's lovely to see. Then, after these tours, we will start with some private reception. So we have the Young IFA network reception, we have the Women of IFA network reception, so a little bit everyone can join, even if you are not young, and even if you're not a woman, you can join. But they are kind of warm-ups for the big opening that takes place at around 6:30. And this is the only thing that I'm not going to unveil. There is a little bit of a surprise in the cultural side, in the cultural side, but that's the only thing that we promise not to unveil. But it's a very typical Portuguese thing. It's not really outstanding, but it's core, genuine Portuguese thing. That will be on the opening day. Then on Monday is traditionally the sponsors day. So it's the day where a lot of sponsors have their own private events, and we respect that, and we ask most everyone to organize their seminars. So I know that a lot of law firms are organizing, a lot of other companies are organizing their own private events. For everyone that doesn't want to go to these private events, or that can kind of split their time in two, we have also the institutional part of the program, which is the Oceanarium in Lisbon. It's one of the biggest, I think it's the biggest in Europe, one of the biggest in the world, and it's not really only a place to see fish or creatures of the sea, it's really an experience. So it's worth visiting, and if you go to a sponsor seminar, think on another day, if you stay one day longer, to go to this Oceanarium. On Tuesday, we will have one of the highlights of Portuguese culture, which is fado singing. And I'm not sure if you are familiar with Fado, but Fado is one of the most traditional songs of and the staple mark of Portuguese culture. And this is said to have origins in the time of the sailors of the Portuguese Empire, when men would sail, would go to the sea, and women would stay, and with the hope that they would see their husbands, they would see the loved ones coming back. So it expresses this sadness. There is also a unique word in Portuguese, which is saudade. You can call it a little bit nostalgia or missing home or something like that, but we gather everything in this word saudade, and this kind of music expresses this feeling. And you really don't need to understand the lyrics to get all the emotions from this. And we managed to get one of the biggest fado singers in Portugal, which is Carminho, and she's going to have a private reception for us in Campo Pequeno. So Campo Pequeno is a little bit controversial. Why? Because it's a former bull house, so a former place of touradas, but it's long ago. Long ago, it's not used for that. So, but indeed, you can experience what was that in the past. And at the end, if that was not enough, and I'm sure it's not going to be enough, you have the Yin Party. One excellent club in Lisbon, and it's near the docks, and it's called Cais, which would be the Portuguese word for docks. And you have this magnificent view over the river. Also, the DJ is amazing, so it's a nice way of ending the day on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, it's the final day. I mean, it's the final day in terms of social program. We still have Thursday morning the seminars, but Wednesday is the last program. This year, the Congress is shortened by half a day. Many people said that they would prefer to return home a little bit earlier, so we will have the closing dinner. And the closing dinner is at a former monastery. So it's a real monastery from the 17th century. So you can really experience what would be to be part of a monastery in the 300 years ago, 400 years ago. And of course, the food is not from 300 years ago. The food is the perfect classics from Portugal, a little bit reinvented, but we have also tried to bring the best of Portuguese culture in this dinner. Of course, throughout the seminar, throughout the days, the lunch is always included, and also we try to bring a little bit of the Portuguese cultures in these lunches, but this is the staple dinner. So this is where you are going to get acquainted with Portuguese foods.
This sounds fantastic, and I'm pretty sure that you have done a great job preparing the Congress and also the social highlights. I'm really looking forward to learning more about the Portuguese culture. For the listeners who are maybe not quite sure whether they can go or they would like to go, maybe are the registrations still open?
Registrations are indeed still open. Unfortunately, for the golf tournament, you can't join. Unfortunately, for some guided tours on Sunday, it's already sold out. We had limited spaces, but all of the rest, you can still join. You have alternative tours, and you just go to ifa2025lisbon.com. And you go to registration and you can register. Unfortunately, the early bird is no longer available. Some people have sent me emails. Oh, can you slide me in the early bird? It's not possible. It was already closed in 15 July, but you have still the regular fee until the 15th of September. So we still have some time until the 15th of September. After the 15th of September, the price increases again. So please hurry up if you are still considering, and register before the 15th of September.
I'm pretty sure you could encourage some doctors to attend and to join the Congress. Maybe let's focus a bit on the topic that you had to deal with the most. What the listeners cannot see is that while we're talking, you are sitting in your office And in the background, I can see a cupboard filled with a lot of books, however, also with a lot of papers laying there. Could you please explain what these papers are about?
Well, these are my books. So the books that I normally use, now mostly everything is digital, but I still like the good old feeling of going through the books, especially for the fundamental books. But, you know, because it's not the first time that you are remotely in my office. We had the preliminary meetings. And over here, probably you see a strange book. And many people ask me, what is this strange book about? And this strange book is not more than the national and topical reports of the Congress. So the big chunk that you see here, it's actually the scientific background of what we are going to discuss in the Congress. The Congress doesn't start on the 5th of October. From a logistic perspective, the Congress started 7 years ago. And many people don't realize that we start organizing the Congress 7 years ago. And from a scientific perspective, it started 4 or 5 years ago. And this topic, we started all working after the directives were completed. We started around March, April 2024. So it's 1.5 years since the moment we start working until the moment that the things are published, and the things were already published on the 25th of August, finally. But yeah, this is how big it is. And I've gone through this at least twice, many of them four times, and then for writing the general report. So I think it gives a physical dimension to the work that is done in preparation of this main topic. And this is just for main topic one. For main topic two, it would be more or less the same. And for each seminar, oh, of course, there are no national reports, but you have also a lot of work. I've already been involved in seminars, so not main topics, but seminars. And it's almost 6 months of work for those seminars. Mm-hmm.
So the main topic one focuses on the concept of residency for corporate tax purposes. Why has this topic been chosen?
Very interesting question. Why was this topic chosen? I mean, this topic was already addressed before at different congresses, namely in 2005, Buenos Aires, so around 20 years ago, and even in 1987 in Brussels. But I would say that, and I think all the audience agrees, that since 2005, in the last 20 years, the way how we address residency and while we look at the residency is completely different. Reason number one, there is an increase on dual residency cases. And everyone starts to look at residency another tax risk variable. In the past, we considered that residence was some sort of a given. It was not even subject to any planning. And right now, advisors find it difficult to understand how the concept works. Second, the concept is becoming progressively complex. So in the past, and this is the result also of globalization and digitalization. In the past, basically, a company was created, would operate, and would sell in a single jurisdiction. So even if there was the possibility of triggering a nexus with different jurisdictions, that would be a remote one because mostly businesses were local. And companies wouldn't be exposed to so many nexuses or to so many connecting factors with other jurisdictions. This is no longer the case. Imagine we are having this interview on a remote basis, and this is precisely how most companies are governed right now. People are no longer in the same place to govern a company, but they meet in situations like these. And you can have, now it's very easy to have the CEO in one place, the CFO in another place, the tax director in another place, the main operating plant of the company in another place. And increasingly, also the law and tax authorities start to understand, well, this criteria may be a genuine way to consider that there is residency here and there were developments, and maybe we can go a little bit later on those developments. But you see that increasingly things that were not taken into account as valid residency criteria, valid residency facts, are now taken. So increasingly companies are faced with the need to be careful on their physical presence or their presence in their jurisdiction with the fear of creating residency over there. And creating residency is not like creating an EP or triggering any other source concept. Creating residency in a jurisdiction means being taxed in general, meaning being taxed on your worldwide income. And if you can afford dual source taxation, because it's in a small stream of income, dual worldwide taxation is unbearable, and it will condemn you a life sentence. It will, you cannot operate anymore. So it's really important that we get this concept straight and we understand what is the concept, what is its purpose, what factors should lead to residency claims, and how can we better plan our lives around this. The final thing is that we often think that residency is connatural to companies, but it's not. I mean, having a residence is something typical of individuals. Then when we extended individual income taxation to corporates, we just use the same criteria. But whereas people have a physical place, a physical abode, and we need that. We need a place where we sleep. We need a place where we put our things, our belongings. That's not the case in a company. So it's not a connatural concept for companies. And that's why in an era where everything is digitalized, and I even know a company that has no headquarters, so it decides to organize itself without a physical base. Globalization and digitalization really brings new challenges to these that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, were not there. So our hope is that with the general report, with the work that we have done, and with the discussions that are going to take place in the Congress in the first day, we also offer new perspectives of understanding the concept and also future avenues of solving dual residency issues.
I think one of the core questions, of course, is how the concept of the place of management or the place of effective management needs to be adopted or interpreted in times of digitalization and also decentralization, which is going hand in hand with the digitalization. And I can imagine that it will be very, very interesting to see how the different concepts of different nations can be compared with each other, because I assume that the problem actually of dual residency and so on only occurs if there are very, very different concepts by the different states. And how will this comparison be approached at the Congress?
Excellent question, actually. And this is the core debate that we have. So if I go through all the reports, and even outside of the reports, there are mainly two criteria that trigger residence. One of them is incorporation, the ZITS theory, right? And the other is place of management, which focus on the governance of a company. Most countries only say place of management, place of effective management. Doesn't say the place of management, or doesn't say there is only one place of management. They say place of management. Even in Germany, Article 1.1 of the Körperschaftssteuergesetz, it speaks about Geschäftsleitung, right? So it's not a very extended concept. And even the definition, it comes in section 10 of the Abgabenordnung, if I'm not mistaken. It speaks about the center of commercial executive management. So if you solely focus on the law, most countries don't give more guidance than this. And so they speak about management. They don't even specify as the Germans commercial executive management, but it's a place of management. So then you go back and you try to analyze and you do some reverse engineering and you say, what is management? And you see economists saying management is everywhere. Management is where there is a business decision that is driven to obtain profits. So you have management at all levels of the company, even at the lowest level of the head of line of a company, there is management. So management is everywhere. It can't really be what the concept means, because wherever the company would have someone making a decision would trigger management. But, and this is the first thing that we need to see from the law, there is really no boundaries. There is no strict boundaries. And in a time where tax authorities explore new avenues for taxing, they can say, well, in my understanding, this person over here, which is the head of production line, this guy is really important. And I consider that there is a place of management here. But then you can go from the lowest line of management to the middle management to the C-suite executives or executive management. In many countries, there are dual boards. So you will have two layers of management. Some countries even go as far as considering the shareholder as somehow doing management. And in addition to all these levels of management that could be considered, and honestly, you can see in some legislations, even there is an identification that where the production takes place, there you can have residency, but all these levels are in different jurisdictions considered. But more interestingly, management is not, it's a de facto concept. So you, even if you can identify day-to-day management or higher management, most jurisdictions say that you need to see where is the de facto, where this management is. So imagine that you find a jurisdiction, and I think Germany is one of the clearest ones, that you have the day-to-day management concepts and you have really a lot of case law. But then you have another difficulty. What if what if there is another person having a preeminent role in the management? So when you go through the first hurdle, you go to the second hurdle, and the second hurdle, de facto, who is managing this company? And in an era of multinationals, you have the parent and several layers of parents, and then a lot of subsidiaries. Sometimes they are SPVs that only have one transaction per year. Where is management? Is really the CEO that is running the company, or is the higher tier that basically decides and takes all the decisions of the company? So there is all these diversity, especially first all the layers, and then where is the factor? And thirdly, I just to add, because it's not only place of management. So the main criteria were really seats or incorporation and place of management. But increasingly, you see jurisdictions expanding. And next to these common criteria that come from commercial law and private international law, you start to see the place where the shareholder is. And there are jurisdictions where the controlling shareholder can trigger residency. You have also the place of the main activity, and you have jurisdictions where you have, if you have a main activity, you have a residency there, or you have substantial activity. So you don't need to have any decisions. You have substantial activity that will trigger residency. And for me, one of the most challenging jurisdictions is those that include any other criteria. So if it was not enough to say place of management and have a de facto approach to management, which can really put the management anywhere, you need only to prove that a certain person is the decisive one, then you just put other factors. And there are a couple of jurisdictions where you have this residual clause, other factors. And I asked the national report, and they simply say, well, we don't know. Sometimes there is a record in the parliamentary debates that this was to cater non-incorporated entities or something. But yeah, nothing prevents tax authorities or other adjudicators like judges, they say, well, I see a lot of activity here. I don't see the decisions taking or all the decisions taking place here, but I see a lot of activity. The law says other factors. Therefore, you are a resident. You are also resident here. And also, and maybe this is for another question, we all assume that it is okay to trigger dual or multiple residency. Why? Because there will always be a treaty, and there will be a treaty that solves. And normally, up until recently, treaties would solve these with place of effective management. So the only thing that would collide would be management and management, and we would see what would be the strongest management, right? But now there are challenges. First, management is in more places. So it's not only about dual residency, but it's about triple residency for a tetra residence or even more. I think I cannot unveil, but you are going to have a case study in the IFA Congress where you will have much more than five residencies, and you see very easily and with real example. It's not an academic case, it's a real case scenario with real jurisdiction. And then we assume, okay, we will see where the strongest management, and it's going to be easy to solve it. It was increasingly more difficult to understand where was the strongest management. But now we change from management to mutual agreement procedure. So the same state that has increased the nexus and triggers nexus for different criteria, and on the core one, governance, doesn't say what is the level or what is core governance, allowing a lot of leeways for tax authorities and for judges, then it says, well, we created somehow this mess, but now it's for tax authorities to decide. And you would expect, well, but there are strict criteria. No, there is not one single criteria that says MAP needs to be on incorporation or MAPs needs to be on. No, they say on criteria such as, namely, so it's indicative criteria that tax authorities may or may not follow. And then what, and I'll close this part from now, but what is even more interesting is that at a certain point, you see that tax authorities develop their own criteria on how to solve the MAP. And sometimes they publish the criteria. And I cannot unveil completely the general report, but this is kind of an appetizer for you to read. And sometimes the criteria are not even closely related to the criteria that triggered residence in the first place or that triggered residence in that jurisdiction. So it may be the case that, and I'm just doing an academic exercise, that you trigger residency in two jurisdictions due to very weak nexuses. So you have the CEO in this jurisdiction attending online meetings. By the way, this is a real criteria. There's a country that says if the CEO attends the meetings online, you can have all the board and the others, you are going to be a resident here. And you have another weak, and the effective management is actually in the third place, but between them, they are going to decide based on where most of the economic production is, or where most of the where the strongest production plant is. And we somehow see residency becoming close to a source concept, which is not how it was developed, and it's not how it was supposed to be. So again, a lot of reasons for you, for the audience, to read the general reports, the national reports, because you're going to find a lot of a very granular description of the rules in the different jurisdictions, not only the rules of the law. I mean, if you read the law of most jurisdictions, honestly, you don't go anywhere, but you read the case law, you read the administrative guidance, and you understand if you have a case with Hungary or if you have a case with China, you can understand what really triggers residency over there. And then you can understand how tax authorities are solving the MAPs right now and what are the criteria that are being used. All in all, a very interesting one. And for, I know that you are catering for a lot of German audience, but for the non-German audience, I think, and this is consensual, Germany is really the place where this concept was developed to the highest degree of detail. So it's really worth reading the German report. It's one of the only sources in English that you have to understand the German literature. And congratulations, Eugene, you did a great job, and you really made a huge contribution to the tax community by detailing with such a level of detail and the German rules. And I'm really thankful. It was a great inspiration for the general report.
Thank you very much. Maybe as a last word, if you could have one wish, what could be the perfect outcome of this year's IFA Congress, especially looking at the concept of residency? What would be the conclusion or the finding that would be perfect at the end of the Congress from your perspective?
Likely the last question is likely the most difficult one, but I don't see the need for such a diversity in the approaches to residency. I don't see the need for every single jurisdiction to invent the wheel. In many aspects in taxation, we are different countries. We have different needs, but not in this one, not in the criteria that should lead to personal nexus. So I think countries should do some kind of balancing, proportionality analysis, and see the advantages and disadvantages of this whole diversity. And somehow this should lead them to converge in single concepts or single interpretation of concepts that could be shared around. And that would give certainty to their taxpayers, especially to their more movable corporate taxpayers or taxpayers that have connection factors with a lot of jurisdictions, and to give them certainty that they are only going to be taxed on a worldwide level by one. Of course, you can trigger source taxation in a lot of countries, and that is what source concepts are for. That's what the concept of PEE, that's why we have withholding taxes. But residency taxation should really be to the strongest personal nexus, and it should be only one. There should be only one way of understanding where governance of a company is.
I think these are perfect final words to find some kind of consensus and more tax certainty for people or companies who are not only at one location, but also cross-border, active in a cross-border way. This would be definitely a step forward. So thank you very much for being on our podcast. The audience are looking forward to see you in Portugal.
Thank you so much, and hope to see you all in Lisbon.